The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
So, good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay? My name is Shinryu, and the question that I have for you this morning is, what is a temple for you? If I ask, what is a temple? What arises for you? Welcome to our first full day of online session, our first full day of this summer Ango. And it's not exactly what we expected here. It's hard to lay any plans and expect them to turn out the way they were intended. So we had expected to be on an in-person retreat starting today. And the Delta surge forced us to scramble and revamp. So we are back to our online practice. And we were fortunate enough to be able to do some in-person practice. I think we had about 5 weeks there where some of us were able to go to the Zendo in the morning or the evening, be there practicing together within the same four walls. And it really was quite wonderful. I felt that and others did as well. Hopefully we will reopen again soon. We'll have the opportunity to be back in the physical Zendo for in-person practice. And I guess I would say that I just would encourage everyone, if you can, if you do get the chance to get back to the physical Zendo when we reopen, do try it, because it's different from this online practice. And I have to say, from my own perspective, in some ways, it's easier than doing this online practice. But I'm not going to talk more today about our in-person practice at the physical Zendo, our original temple. I want to talk a little more now about our second temple, which is our online practice space. So we've been doing this now for over a year. And I think it's still a work in progress. However, we have established a set of forms. It's fairly stable. We've got a great team of hosts for our online practice. We have some coordinators behind the scenes who are scheduling the sessions and the talks and the recordings of the online talks. I don't think any of us could have ever conceived that we would be doing what we're doing back in early 2020. And I have to say that I was a little skeptical when we got started. I wasn't sure how well this was going to go, but I think my skepticism was misplaced. And it's actually worked out very well for us in many ways. First of all, we've been able to practice together as a community, rather than in the isolation of our bedrooms and living rooms, apartments, homes. We've also been able to reconnect with a lot of Sangha members who are at a distance and can't get to the physical Zendo on Broadway and Houston all that easily. So that's been wonderful. And a further benefit, completely unanticipated, is that a lot of new people have found us and managed to integrate with the community. And that has been a blessing as well. But I think that, as I said before, online practice is not that easy. Normally we go to the physical Zendo, or we go to a retreat up at Wisdom House to get away from our ordinary everyday surroundings. And I think one of the big challenges for doing online practice is how to work with our ordinary everyday circumstances, the kinds of distractions, obligations, attachments that we have on a normal basis. So one way to work with these challenges is to think about the third temple. What is the third temple? Well, if you just lift your eyes up from the computer screen and look around at your surroundings, you might think of these surroundings as the third temple. They might seem drab or ordinary or profane, not so special or holy as a real temple. But if we think about them as a temple, then it might help us to be able to practice and engage more fully right now. I remember that not long after I first came to New York City, I went uptown to Spanish Harlem for a party. There were a lot of young people there. Many of them were immigrants from different parts of Latin America, a number of Colombians, I think some Puerto Ricans, Dominicans. And a lot of them were musicians. It was a very, very interesting scene. And I remember having a conversation with a young Colombian guy, and I'm not sure how we got to this, but at one point he said to me, "Do you know what an altar is?" And at that point, I hadn't discovered the Village Zendo, but I had been to a couple of Zen centers, and I felt like I kind of knew my way around. So I said, "Yeah, I know what an altar is." And he said, "Well, what is it?" And then I stumbled and faltered and stammered and couldn't really say much of anything that made sense and petered out feebly. And then he just opened his arms and opened his hands and gestured to the room and said, "This is an altar." And in that moment, I immediately knew what he meant. It was kind of dark, a little dingy, modest apartment, people standing, sitting on sofas and chairs, drinking, talking, listening to music, the buzz in the room. And it really was a perfect space in which to wake up and even make an offering. So if we think about what a temple is, we might turn to an anthropological text, but here in our Zen context, we can just cut to the chase. A temple is where the Buddha hangs out. It's the abode of the Buddha. It's a place for awakening and for service. So we might look around at our surroundings and think about our bedrooms and living rooms and apartments and homes as the abode of a Buddha, a place for awakening and service. And I think that our study text for this Ango, Dogen's Instructions to a Cook, is actually the perfect text for this online retreat. Dogen oftentimes talks about silent seated meditation in the Buddha hall, but that's not what he talks about in this text. He's giving instructions to the cook who is engaged in the dynamic active practice in the other living and working spheres of the monastery. And if we can take his teachings to heart, we can apply them in our own living and working spaces over these days. So to be able to see our ordinary, everyday living and working spaces as the abode of a Buddha. Dogen gives us a number of examples when he talks about the cook as someone who is expressing the Buddha Dharma in his everyday activity. He says, for example, put your whole attention into the work, seeing just what the situation calls for. This is a Thomas Wright's translation. Over and over again, he tells us that the cook is someone who really pays attention to what's right in front of him or her, and then throws himself wholeheartedly into his activity. So put your whole attention into the work, seeing just what the situation calls for. He says, maintain an attitude that builds great temples from ordinary blades of grass, that expounds the Buddha Dharma through the most trivial activity. Being scrupulous in our actions and pouring our energy into those actions, there is no reason why we cannot equal the ancient masters. So the difficulties with this practice are not just the technology. They're not just our immediate surroundings, the distractions and obligations and attachments of our daily life. They also have to do, of course, with our body and mind and heart. It's very hard for us to really take on the teaching that this very body is the body of Buddha, or this very mind is the mind of Buddha. This very heart is the heart of Buddha. We create a gap between ourselves and Buddha because we see our physical limitations and infirmities. We know the confusion and messiness and craving and fury in our minds. We know the ups and downs of our heart, our heartbreak and joy. And we somehow imagine that the life of a Buddha is different. But actually, our practice is not about overcoming our physical or magically transforming our physical limitations or inabilities, or blanking out the flow of our thoughts, or denying or transcending our emotional life. Our practice is being present to those things, being intimate with those things. And surely all the Buddhas of the past also had their physical pain and discomfort, their own mental and emotional challenges, just as we do. Dogen says, our minds go racing about like horses running wild in the fields, while our emotions are unmanageable, like monkeys swinging in the trees. If only we could step back to carefully look on the horse and monkey, our lives would naturally become one with our work. And I would say, one with Buddha. And the challenges for this, of course, are not just our surroundings, not just our body and mind and heart, but also the wider world, which influences our life and our body and mind and heart. I was just out on the West Coast for a little over 2 weeks. I had a wonderful trip. It was great to see friends and family and be in old landscapes that I love. But the whole time that I was there, in the back of my mind, I was thinking about the catastrophes in California and in our times. The environmental catastrophe, I was not threatened by wildfire. I wasn't smelling smoke, but it was in the back of my mind. And the way I see California now really has changed after year of wildfires, which have come close to people and places that I love. And the health catastrophe, the whole time I was there on my trip, gnawing at me was the knowledge that the Delta infections were increasing constantly. And the economic crisis, I was seeing all of these homeless people on the streets of San Francisco at the foot of gleaming new skyscrapers. The economic inequalities and the economic hardships that so many people face, the displacement of the poor by the rich. Not to mention the political crises of our times. I just finished reading Jane Mayer's New Yorker piece on the corporate dark money that's funding the right-wing voter suppression legislation around the country, which is primarily targeted at Black people and Latinos and Native Americans and immigrants. So there are all these things that I find disturbing and that affect me and that shape my mind and heart. But how can we deal with these things from a practice perspective? Well, if we might think of our body-mind as our fourth temple, we might think of the wide, vast world as our fifth temple. And Dogen gives us some advice about this. He says, so much of the time, our position vis-a-vis the wider world when we find it things disturbing is to either deny it or put our heads in the sand, or maybe adopt a kind of oppositional posture in which we automatically react against whatever we come across. But Dogen gives us another way to approach things. So he says, both day and night allow all things to come into and reside within your mind. Allow your mind or self and all things to function together as a whole. This sounds like perfect instruction for Zazen, for Shikantaza, our meditation in the Zendo. But here he's giving that instruction to the cook. Allow all things to come into and reside within your mind. Allow your mind or self and all things to function together as a whole. So it's a notion of not separating from all of the external phenomena of the world. And he also has this wonderful axiom. He says, a fool sees himself as other, but a wise woman sees others as herself. A fool sees himself as other, but a wise woman sees others as herself. Once again, breaking down that barrier between ourselves and the world, ourselves and others, creates a different basis from which to see the world and act in it. And this is what Dogen's talking about at the end of his text when he talks about what Wright calls magnanimous mind, or the Village Zendo online translation of the text calls vast heart. If we can allow everything to inhabit the space of our practice and the space of our spirit, it encompasses much more, and it gives us much more space in which to see things and respond to things a little more skillfully. So at the end, Dogen says, all the great teachers down through the ages have learned the meaning of magnanimity, not merely from writing the character for it, but through the various events and circumstances of their lives. Even now, we can clearly hear their voices expounding the most fundamental truths and the ramifications of those truths for our lives. They were men and women whose eyes were open to what is most vital in a life of practice, enabling us to have contact with the Buddha, the reality of life. Their very lives manifested the sole purpose of the true self. And he ends, whether you are the head of a temple, a senior monk or other officer, or simply an ordinary practitioner, do not forget the attitude behind living out your life with joy, having the deep concern of a parent, or carrying out all your activities with magnanimity. There's a story that one day the Buddha was taking a walk with his entourage, and he came to a place and he pointed to a spot and he said, that would be a good place for a temple. And in that moment, the god Indra stepped forth and took a blade of grass, planted it in the ground and said, the temple is built. If we're able to let go of our narrow, self-centered ideas and judgments and reactions for a moment, then in that spirit of practice, every place is a temple. In the spirit of practice, we have our first temple on Broadway and Houston. We have our online temple. We have the temple of our living and working spaces. We have our fourth temple of our body, mind, and heart, and the fifth temple of the vast, wide world. I know it's not always easy to do this. Sometimes it's very easy, and other times it's not easy. It doesn't always mean that reality matches our imagination of what it should be or what we'd like it to be. But if we can, for a moment, actually not even set aside our reactions and judgments and interests and values, not even set them aside, allow them to be present, but within the wider space, within the wider magnanimous mind, the wider spirit of practice, then in that moment, everything, every place is a temple. And when every place is a temple, it really doesn't even make any sense to talk about a temple because it's not separate from any place else. Nor is it necessary to talk about the abode of a Buddha or to talk about a place of awareness and service. We can just open our arms and our hands and our hearts, and voila. And as our Shuso Shomon said, we can just roll up our sleeves and attend to what's at hand. So I want to wish you all very well with your online Ongo.